A lot of folks in this town predicted that after the midterm elections, Washington would be headed for more partisanship and more gridlock. And instead, this has been a season of progress for the American people.
Oh, the good old days. President Obama in December, late December 2010. Remember the lame duck session with all that compromise and accomplishment? The tax cut and unemployment insurance bill, repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell, the START treaty, the 911 first responders bill. Well, those were the good old days of 2010.
It's going to be acrimonious, there's no question. He has been one of the most corrupt presidents in modern times.
Republican Congressman Daryl Issa on Rush Limbaugh. Issa will head the committee that gets to investigate White House behaviors. The new Congress, with the Republican majority in the House, takes office tomorrow, and we expect to see in the House a reading of the Constitution to make a political and philosophical point, a rash of investigations of Obama regulations, an Obamacare repeal bill, a push to cut $100 billion or 20% out of many domestic programs, raising the roof over raising the debt ceiling. All that while Democrats consider changing the Senate rules to make it harder to filibuster, and while President Obama looks for more unilateral ways to make policy, like having the EPA regulate greenhouse gases and enabling end-of-life Medicare discussions by decree rather than by an act of Congress. With divided government, compromise may eventually come, but first all sides will throw down the gauntlet before they throw in the towel. So let's talk about it with the It's a Free Country All-Stars, bloggers from left, right, and other who've been contributing to our politics website, itsafreecountry.org. Justin Krebs, founder of the blog Living Liberally, Solomon Kleinsmith, author of the blog Rise of the Center, and Carol Markowitz, conservative blogger at Alarming News. Carol and Solomon, welcome back. Justin, welcome to the club.
Thanks, Brian.
And listeners, what is your best hope for moving the country forward in the new era of divided government? Liberals, call in. Conservatives, call in. Centrists, call in and give us your realistic agenda items or comment on how they are actually starting off down there. Post your thoughts to itsafreecountry.org or call us up, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Progressives, conservatives, others, please chime in, 212-433-9692. And Justin, as the newbie, you'll get the first ask today. Is there hope for a progressive agenda this year, or is it all going to be playing defense as House Republicans try to undo Obama, Pelosi, and Reid?
I fear that most of it will be playing defense, but that doesn't mean that there's no hope for a progressive agenda moving forward. I think what we saw in the lame duck session you just referred to was not just that those parties came together and compromised, but was that Democrats stood up for progressive values. On the Zadroga bill, Don't Ask, Don't Tell, they said, we are going to push this through. We're going to make this happen. And I think that as the Republicans showed over the last 2 years, even a minority, if they're determined enough, can move their agenda forward. They just have to stick by their principles.
Well, their agenda was saying no to the Obama agenda. So what agenda do you think the progressives in Congress right now, plus President Obama, might be able to move forward? Anything specific?
I think that we'll see progress on job creation, because right now every politician is saying jobs, jobs, jobs at the top of their agenda. And actually, you can't get to jobs just by cutting taxes. If we could have done that, we would have had more jobs over the last decade. I think both parties know that they need to create jobs, and the way you do that is with government investment. And if you're going to create that kind of investment, that is going to be a progressive frame that Democrats can be fighting for and can even bring some Republicans along for the ride.
Proceeding from left to right across your radio dial, Solomon Kleinsmith from Rise of the Center. Is the divided government that we're about to have a Rise of the Center moment by definition, or just a polarizing brawl where the center is actually gone from the debate for most of the year?
Well, I think since so many moderates got lost their seats, it's probably going to be more polarization than Rising of the Center. Although in the long term, it might cause speeding up of the Rise of the Center.
Do you have maybe a top three centrist to-do list for this Congress?
Oh, boy. Just three, huh?
Well, yeah. It's radio. You know what they say. If the Ten Commandments were issued in the broadcast era, the news media would report as God gave Moses the Ten Commandments today. The most important two were. So start with three.
Deficit reduction is really important with the deficit commission from last year. That's really big with centrists. I think we can start doing that without cutting into economic growth too much. Job growth is really important. It's just dependent on, you know, not just using a bunch of extra spending that we are not going to pay for to do it. I think if you compromise those two things together, short-term economic growth coupled with reforms that will in the long run cut the deficit, I think those two are probably more important than any of the next 20 put together.
And, Carol, the Republicans have the House majority but not the Senate and, of course, not the president's veto pen. So when it comes to things like repealing Obamacare, is this just theater or is there a plan for enacting an actual conservative agenda?
There might be a plan, but Republicans haven't had anything for the last 2 years, and they still managed to stop a lot of the Obama agenda, so I'm pretty hopeful. And, I mean, like Justin said, you know, there is something good about being in the minority and being able to stop the other side's actions. Obama had a filibuster-proof majority for a little while there and still wasn't able to get very much done. And about the compromising in the lame duck session, if future compromising will mean that Obama basically keeps extending tax cuts and lives up to so many conservative principles, I'm all for compromise.
So let me play a couple of clips of people talking about possible areas of compromise in the new term and get your reaction. First, here is incoming Republican Senator Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania on Meet the Press.
Well, if we focus on the growth side, and you know, the two big messages from my campaign were about restoring economic growth and the job creation that comes with it and getting spending under control. On the growth side, I think there are some areas where we can work with the president, some areas where it's going to be tough. One area where we certainly can is trade. I think the president's finally gotten where he's happy with the South Korean trade agreement. We certainly should get that done, get Colombia, get Panama done, and move on from there. I think tax policy is a possible area, one with plenty of landmines, but plenty of opportunities. Simplify the code, lower rates. We should be lowering corporate tax rates because we have the highest in the world right now. We should lower the capital gains rate. We should have a territorial tax system like the rest of the world does so that we have a more competitive environment. The third thing I think we need to do, and this is going to be confrontational, is deal with the regulatory overreach. Mm-hmm. There are regulatory agencies trying to impose on our economy the things that Congress has rejected.
Carol, you want to react to any of that? He listed some specific areas for possible compromise and agreement and progress and other things that he thinks are going to be controversial. What strikes you there?
I think he's a genius. I mean, what other conservative could come out against earmarks and for free trade and for less regulation and somehow be seen as a compromiser? I mean, these are all standard conservative values. The way he framed it as some kind of compromise with the left is just brilliant.
Justin, you want to get in there?
I mean, I agree with Carol that he's actually speaking like a true conservative, just making himself sound more moderate. I would absolutely think that in the notion of growth and job creation, that's an area where Democrats and Republicans will have to work together. But you don't create jobs by outsourcing them. You don't create jobs by cutting them. You don't improve services by cutting down on the people providing those services. And we know that Pat Toomey has never seen a tax cut he doesn't like. He has never seen outsourcing he doesn't like. That's what we need to fight against. And honestly, I would have no problem with him speaking his side and the Democrats speaking an alternative side and give the American people the choice between the two.
Solomon?
Hey, with trade, it's a pretty tough one. I think that we can better use our trade position to get reforms on the other end. And I don't think we've done that effectively, no matter if it's a Democrat or a Republican, for a long time.
All right. Now, let me play another clip. Here is the center-right New York Times columnist David Brooks on Meet the Press laying odds on bipartisan progress for this year.
I've become optimistic, or at least think there's like a 30% chance that something real can happen, because both parties are right. Obama's right that we need growth, we need the infrastructure spending, the energy research. The Republicans are right, we do need to control spending. And there's actually ways to put these things together. They're not contradictory. I actually think there's a decent chance we could not have the gridlock that a lot of people used to expect.
Who wants to jump in on that?
I'll just say,
everybody wants to jump. Is that Justin who spoke first? It was Solomon.
But release first. Carol, please.
Well, I was just going to say that David Brooks is the guy that was so wowed by Barack Obama that he wrote the Times column, you know, Run, Barack, Run. He's pro-choice, anti-gun, for gay marriage, and doesn't think Republicans should run on small government issues. So my overall point is that he does not speak for mainstream Republicans. So his hopeful Republicans are going to compromise with the Democrats is just extremely David Brooks's hope, not the reality of the situation.
So, Carolyn, what he said there, Obama's right that we need growth, we need the infrastructure spending, the energy research. Do you disagree with those things?
Sure. No, I absolutely agree. I just don't think in an overall way Republicans are going to compromise with Obama on issues beyond what are already conservative values, the way Pat Toomey spoke against earmarks. Sure, they'll compromise with Obama on banning earmarks, no problem. You know, anything that's already conservative, they'll probably push, but I don't see them going for any big spending liberal policies after being elected on smaller government, less spending in this last election.
Solomon Kleinsmith from Rise of the Center.
Well, I disagree with her on the banning earmarks. I really don't see that they're going to be doing that. I hope that they do. You know, there could be some bipartisan effort on that, but that's a symbolic issue, although it's I think, one of the roots of corruption.
You mean after all of this, pushing Mitch McConnell to reverse his historical support of earmarks? Mitch McConnell is now for banning earmarks. I mean, that was a heavy lift for him to do that turnaround. After all of this and this being, you know, so much at the center of the Tea Party agenda, you don't think they're going to get it done?
I don't. Maybe I'm a little cynical. I know I am, but I just don't see it happening. If it was going to happen, it would have happened already, and they're not even getting it going completely on the right where all the pressure is coming from, and there's not as much pressure on the left for banning earmarks. So,
Justin?
You know, the earmarks issue aside, I think David Brooks's point that there needs to be compromise to move forward is a fair one. I rarely agree with David Brooks, but I do think that the need for greater investment. And at the same time, there are certain tax cuts I could imagine Democrats being in favor of. I could imagine a decrease in corporate taxes to help promote jobs, while not a decrease in the taxes on personal wealth, personal income. So I do think that there's the potential for compromise. I don't see it coming from the Republicans, and I agree with Carol on that. I think the Republicans are going to be as stubborn as they can. It is in their interest to not let President Obama move forward on any policy agendas. And I think the Democrats, the real progressives in the Democratic caucus, need to stand up and be as stubborn, as forceful, as compelling as Bernie Sanders was when he filibustered the tax compromise in order to really take their argument to the American people.
Justin Krebs speaking there, founder of the blog Living Liberally. We also have Solomon Kleinsmith, author of the blog Rise of the Center, and Carol Markowitz, conservative blogger at Alarming News, and you at 212-433-WNYC. Join our It's a Free Country All-Stars, 212-433-9692, like John in Orange County. Hi, John, you're on WNYC.
Hey, Brian. I just have a comment, and I can get off after I say it. But I will support for myself the first party or first candidate that has the cojones or chutzpah, your choice, to take a stance that what we need to pull ourselves out of this mess is smaller government and higher taxes, both. We need smaller government and higher taxes.
How do you get smaller government and higher taxes? How do those fit together as something that makes sense?
Well, I think smaller government to reduce spending and higher taxes, because I think we're in such a mess financially and economically that we're actually, either one by themselves is not enough to accomplish equilibrium. I think we actually need both as a temporary fix, sort of an Atkins diet kicking into ketosis sort of approach to fixing things, and then when it irons itself out, then we can maybe start talking about a more normal system.
The first Atkins diet analysis of congressional politics that we have had on the show. So, John, thank you very much. Well, talk about cutting spending. Carol Markowitz, the Republican plan to cut $100 billion from discretionary spending, that's about a 20% cut in programs other than Social Security, Medicare, or the military, which are not on the table right now. Is that for real? Coming out of education, transportation, scientific research, law enforcement, where would $100 billion or 20% come from all at once? Or is this just grandstanding by the new House Republicans?
Partially grandstanding. I don't think they're going to make cuts that deep. They still have to go back to their districts and get reelected, and it'll be easy to run against, you know, the guy that cut 50% of school funding or something. So I think they need to make some deep cuts, but I don't think it'll be quite that deep, unfortunately. In a lot of ways, the states should be funding a lot of these projects that you talk about, but they don't have any money either. So,
and that, of course, is what's going on, right? The
right.
stimulus window is closed, as they say. And
exactly.
So the states are really feeling the crunch now, as we know here in New York and New Jersey and Connecticut.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And the fact is that the states don't have any money, and neither does the federal government. So this continued spending, just it can't continue, but it probably will for the foreseeable future just because it's politically expedient.
Justin, even being a progressive, is this purge, however far it actually gets in a divided Congress, a good thing? Maybe before tackling the really big budget items of Social Security and Medicare and the military, it's a good cleansing process for Congress to reinspect all the other discretionary items out there and have this maybe once-in-a-generation debate about what business government should actually be in.
It's never a bad idea to evaluate and have oversight when you can. And if the Republicans are going to do meaningful oversight, more power to them. I think at times the Democrats fell down on the job. But I think that even your premise had a problem. Why is defense spending off the table? Why, when conservatives talk about the dangers of deficits, do we never look at how much goes unchecked in our defense spending and, honestly, off the books, that the Defense Department budget doesn't actually include the wars that we're fighting? That's, I think, actually a large issue that more of the American public would like to see us address than cutting Social Security and Medicare, two programs that are wildly popular.
And Solomon, I wonder if you agree with that putting the military in the same category as Social Security and Medicare, which are not considered discretionary spending, technically the military is from year to year, is a mistake by the Republicans. That maybe with the war in Afghanistan, relatively unpopular in the country right now, they really should be looking at military spending as something other than sacred, even on the right side of the aisle.
Well, this all is a way of looking at magical thinking on both the left and the right. You know, a lot of people on the left, I don't know if Justin's with this or not, think that we can get all the deficit reduction that we need to be doing by cutting everything that they don't like. And they think that they can do it by deficit spending and other discretionary spending. And that's just not possible. There's not enough out there to squeeze unless I don't even know. But in the defense spending, we can cut a lot there. We don't need to be the world police in a lot of places that we're in. I think I actually blogged about this on my own site not too long ago, where we can take a more of a backup people approach, where we're not the front line defense in South Korea, for instance. They can defend themselves. They've got a booming economy. We don't have to do it for them, or they can pay us to do it. Japan's the same way, and in Europe, why do we have a giant force there still? You know, that doesn't make any sense. It's not like Russia is going to attack Europe anytime soon. But in Social Security, it's the same thing. A lot of people on the left want to say that we shouldn't cut Social Security a lot, and that's true, but we can tweak it. The proposals in the Deficit Reduction Committee proposed, raising the age 2 years over, 75 years. That's maybe a month a year. And I think a lot of people can get behind that. A lot of people understand that people are living longer and living healthier longer. And also, if we tweak it a little bit to make it so the increase in payouts goes up a little bit slower, and we don't give money at all to really wealthy people. So, you know, like Warren Buffett famously said that he gets Social Security just like everybody else, and why is he doing that? And then making it a little bit more progressive where if you're, you know, upper middle class, you maybe get a little bit less, and if you're middle class or below, you get the same rates. You know, if you, you make all those kind of common sense adjustments, and I think that we can get the deficit to where we need it to be.
We're going to continue in a minute with our It's a Free Country All-Stars, Justin Krebs, Solomon Kleinsmith, and Carol Markowitz, and more of your calls and online comments. And when we come back, we're going to play a really interesting exchange from Meet the Press on Sunday about the idea of American sacrifice at this moment in our history and get everybody's reaction, and also the plan of the House Republican leadership that each new bill be introduced with an explanation of why the Constitution allows it. Do you think this is a good idea? Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up on tomorrow's show, we will talk about the inauguration of Connecticut's new governor, Dan Malloy, and indications that Malloy, despite the fiscal problems in the Nutmeg State, is going to take a more left-of-center approach than Andrew Cuomo is in New York. The first day of the Dan Malloy administration in our area, coming up on tomorrow's Brian Lehrer Show. Right now, we continue with the It's a Free Country All-Stars, bloggers from left, right, and other who've been contributing to our politics website, itsafreecountry.org. Justin Krebs, founder of the blog Living Liberally, Solomon Kleinsmith, author of the blog Rise of the Center, and Carol Markowitz, conservative blogger at Alarming News. Callers and commenters, again, you can join our It's a Free Country All-Stars because it's a free country. You can write a comment on the site, itsafreecountry.org, or call up right now on anything about the new Congress, 212-433-WNYC. And one possible topic for you is our thoroughly unscientific It's a Free Country poll question for today. And here's the question. The Republican House leadership is asking that each new bill be introduced with an explanation of why the Constitution allows it. Do you think this is a good idea? The Republican House leadership is asking that each new bill be introduced with an explanation of why the Constitution allows it. Do you think this is a good idea? Go register your answer on the site. You'll see the online poll at itsfreecountry.org, or call us up with that or anything else, 212-433-9692. And can I get all your takes on this plan to read the Constitution on the House floor Thursday? I guess they're going to read the whole Constitution. It's not that long. And then have each new bill be introduced with an explanation of why the country allows it. Justin, is this a stunt? Or even if it is a stunt, is it a good civics lesson for the American people?
I wish that George Bush had been forced to read the Constitution more often. I think it's a great idea.
Carol, how do you expect this to actually be used by the House Republicans in legislation that they try to, you know, I'm thinking about Bloom's Day, right, where they people get together and read Ulysses a chapter at a time. That takes all day. It's going to actually take not that long to read the Constitution, which is available in a little pamphlet from several sites online and usually for free or a couple of bucks. But, you know, after the big symbolic reading on the House floor on Thursday, do you think it'll actually be used in legislation they try to introduce if they're claiming that everything has to have a constitutional grounding and not just used in things that they try to repeal?
I wonder what Ron Paul is thinking right now, because that's been his shtick for years, that he votes against everything. He's Congressman No, because the Constitution doesn't give him those powers. So Boehner's kind of stealing his gimmick. Great, read the Constitution. That's excellent. I love that our elected officials will be a little bit more familiar with it. But the truth is, if they use it to support their votes, they're going to be committing political suicide everywhere outside of Ron Paul's district for some reason.
Why do you say that?
They'll find themselves voting against, say, aid to Hurricane Katrina victims. They'll find themselves voting against the usual congressional performances, like giving out Medal of Honors to different people. Ron Paul votes against all of that because the Constitution doesn't allow for that. So it would be great if our elected officials...
Carol, we're having trouble with your line breaking up, so we're going to have to call you right back. And while we're doing that, let me play this interesting exchange from Sunday's Meet the Press on the topic of sacrifice. You will hear David Brooks, followed by Republican Senator Pat Toomey.
I think the Republican Party has changed from, say, 95 or even the last couple of years when they weren't willing to sacrifice. This is a Republican Party more dedicated to asking and to talking about issues like entitlements, to really asking these kind of questions. So we're going to have a huge debate about the size of government. And I think the Republican Party is actually much more willing to ask for the joint sacrifice than they were, say, under Tom DeLay.
Except no taxing.
I think this is the wrong I just think this is the wrong way to construct this discussion and focus so much on the sacrifice. Let's remember, for instance, that under the current tax rates, for the first 4 years in which they were fully in effect, from 2004 through 2007 inclusive, total government federal spending was just below 20% of GDP. Revenue was 17.5% on average. And we had deficits that were just barely over 2% of GDP, half of that time below 2%. This was not excruciating suffering that the American people were going through in these years. And yet with these rates, we had deficits that were really quite manageable. We can do this again.
Carol, I'm going to come right back to you on this. As the conservative on the panel, you heard Senator Toomey there, and I think even since 9/11, this has been the Republican refrain that talking in terms of sacrifice is the wrong language for America at this time. Why do you think they go there, and do you go there?
I think it should come more from place of strength, but I disagree with him a little bit that I do think the language of sacrifice is important during wartime, and let's face it, we are still in a war despite the fact that a Republican is no longer president, so it's no longer on the front page of the newspaper every day.
Or sacrifice.
It is a time of sacrifice.
Or sacrifice in the ongoing, you know, challenge of this economic era, because I guess it becomes a code for the tax cuts for the wealthy, right? When the Democrats say everybody's got to sacrifice, that's usually code for, well, we also have to tax the wealthy a little bit more because they're not sacrificing. They're not the ones who are subject to the economic draft that takes them into the war. They're not the ones losing their jobs, you know, in the shakeout with unemployment. So we're not actually asking anything of the wealthy. And the only thing we can really ask of the wealthy is to be taxed a little bit more.
Right.
So that's the actual conversation, right?
But that's ridiculous because the wealthy already pay significantly the majority of the taxes that the government receives. So, to ask the quote unquote the wealthy to sacrifice even more, it just doesn't make any sense.
Who else, and
it won't stimulate our economy ultimately.
Who else has a reaction to that exchange on sacrifice between David Brooks and Pat Toomey? Solomon, do you?
Well, yeah. I mean, I completely agree. It's sort of what I mentioned before about the magical thinking. Both parties have been selling this idea that they can get everything that they want by just going against what the other side wants. And that's just not true. It's not just not true. You can't give as much social welfare type benefits out without raising taxes. And the Democrats are much more willing to spend money on social welfare programs than they are raising taxes. And the Republicans, they're the same way. It's just their priorities are a little bit different. They want to spend more on the military and things like that, and they want to cut taxes that they're not willing to pay for. Both sides, I don't even think it should be called sacrifice. It should just be called, we need to start paying for what we're doing. You know, and if that sacrifice, you know, that's just common sense, you know. And I can't spend 2% of my more than I make every year forever. You know, I'll have to pay that back someday, and so does the government. And unless I want to pass it on to my kids, which is exactly what both parties have been doing for, you know, two generations.
Justin?
I think sacrifice is an important concept that has been characterized many of our greatest generations in America. And you hear stories of the World War II generation, the greatest generation, and those who were overseas and those who were at home were sacrificing for a shared purpose. We are not being asked to sacrifice these days, but to sacrifice, we'd actually have to know what that shared purpose is. We have to have the discussion of what kind of country we want, a country where people have opportunity, have welfare, have health care, have the education that they need. And I'm not sure we've had that conversation. So of course, everyone's instinct is going to be, well, why should I sacrifice if somebody else isn't? But I think that the concept of sacrifice is one that we've sadly lost, and it was best characterized last decade when, days after September 11th, rather than being asked to sacrifice, to cut down on our energy consumption, because, in fact, our energy consumption is tied to our relationship in the Middle East, we were told to go shopping. There's a different kind of discussion that we need our leaders to be leading us if we're going to really fix the problems of our country.
Anybody want to react to that?
I think that shopping thing, I mean, we needed to stimulate our economy. That's a way of stimulating it. We needed to get our just get out of our houses and go outside. I mean, I know myself, I was in New York on 9/11. I just stayed home for a week because it was so just shocking and awful. So, I mean, when President Bush said go shopping, he didn't mean, like, you know, take it easy and relax. He meant go stimulate the economy, get your life going again. He might have not phrased it perfectly, but that was his intent.
But was there any time, Carol, that we were asked by our elected officials to use less energy? That somehow our economy and our international affairs are hurt by our addiction to oil? Have we ever been asked to use less by our elected officials?
Well, by the same token, have we ever had our elected officials frankly say to us that we don't want to have the same relationship that we do to the Arab countries? We pretend that that's not happening. So, no, we've never heard that from any of our elected officials.
Anthony in Ramsey wants to comment on the idea of grounding every new bill in the Constitution. Anthony, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi. My congressman, Scott Garrett, is the founder of this organization or this caucus in Congress, and I think really what he's trying to do is take control of the Supreme Court. 1803 case, Marbury versus Madison, determination that the Supreme Court has the final say on what's constitutional. So I think we should leave that to that branch of the government. Health care, if they're against health care, they should waive it for themselves, for their dependents, and all of their staff people. In fact, Garrett has voted against unemployment. He voted against Katrina. He's seeking to repeal health care reform. Go ahead. They don't want health care. Let them stand up and be without health care first.
Peter, the Supreme Court is the ultimate arbiter of constitutionality, yes. But why wouldn't it be a good thing for members of Congress to think about the constitutional context and articulate the constitutional context of new laws under the Constitution?
I'm sorry. Are you asking
yes,
me?
Yes, I am, Anthony.
Okay. Well, that's fine, because Congress should not endeavor to enact legislation that is clearly unconstitutional. But if you have the strict constructionists take the position that it doesn't say it in the Constitution, then therefore we can't legislate. That would not meet the needs of a modern society, and I believe that's what they're proposing to do.
Thank you very much. Jeff in Colts Neck, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, how are you? Thank
okay.
you for taking my call.
Sure.
The comment that Carol had just recently made about her opposition to raising taxes for the wealthy. I live in a very, very well-to-do community. I'm well off, and I believe it's a personal responsibility of people to, especially those who are in a good economic situation, to pay back to the country, because the country has given us the infrastructure, the schools, the labor in order for us to make the money for ourselves. And it's our way of giving back to help the economy come out of this difficulty.
Carol, questions for you.
That's great. Nobody's stopping you from sending more money to the government. You can write as big a check as you'd like. If you feel that you owe more to the government, which you feel spends your money the way you'd like it to be spent, then please, by all means, give more of your salary to the government to do that.
Okay, but that's not good. My additional $5,000 or $10,000 is not going to make any difference. It has to be a collective effort.
But if other people, I believe Warren Buffett said something similar, he can give more money to the government. I don't feel that I give not enough money to the government. And I also don't feel that my money is spent the way I would like it to be spent. I feel like there's just so much waste. And I I'm not interested in sending more of my paycheck to the government to misspend and get us into further deficits.
Jeff, thank you.
And can I comment on the waste comment?
Very, very briefly, like 20 seconds.
That's something that a lot of people say, that there's too much waste, But then every time they come in and they try to look for it, and, you know, if there is a lot of waste, maybe it amounts to a few percentage points. The waste argument is not a real argument.
We have 30 seconds left. Can I get a prediction? We got a lot of opinions, and it's been great. How about a prediction on one big thing that Congress will accomplish, and with President Obama, given the divided nature of the government right now, in 2011. You got anything, Justin?
I think they will accomplish some of those trade deals that you mentioned before and that Pat Toomey mentioned before. I'm not enthusiastic about them, but I think they'll accomplish them.
Solomon?
You know, I'm not going to make any predictions because I'm not exactly sure how things are going to pan out.
Carol?
I have to agree with Justin. The trade deals are the only thing looking promising to me right now. It's the only place that they seem to be really compromising in advance of the session.
Not the first thing on the American people's lips, the South Korea trade agreement. But we'll see if they can get any further than that. Justin Krebs, founder of the blog Living Liberally. Solomon Kleinsmith, author of the blog Rise of the Center. Carol Markowitz, from a conservative blogger from Alarming News, her blog. Thank you all very much for being our It's a Free Country All-Stars.
And thank you very much.
Listeners, you can read all their posts on our politics website, itsafreecountry.org. You can also keep this conversation going there right now. A lot of people are posting. And you can answer our thoroughly unscientific It's a Free Country poll question for today. The Republican House leadership is asking that each new bill be introduced with an explanation of why the Constitution allows it. Do you think this is a good idea? Go to itsafreecountry.org and register your answer. Coming up in a minute, something completely different. We will have a call-in for dancers on your reactions to the depiction of dance in the movie The Black Swan. You can call us now, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Is this it? Are you never giving your daughters ballet lessons after seeing that flick? 212-433-9692.